Hey, it's Aunt Therese, and I hope you and your family are enjoying the holidays. I cannot believe that 2018 is almost over, but I did want to take a moment to thank you for listening to the Savvy Painter podcast. You know, a few weeks ago, we passed an incredible milestone. Savvy Painter has been downloaded more than 2 million times by artists all over the globe. Last week, I got to celebrate with a couple of you in Los Angeles, where I currently am, and it was really fun, so I'm really grateful for those of you who were able to come out. I was a little bit bummed that I didn't get to see that happen in real time, though. I was watching it when we hit 1 million downloads. It's kind of like watching your odometer flip over. There's something just so gratifying about it. Regardless, I'm grateful for all of you who listen, who write in to tell me how you're doing, and for those of you who support the podcast financially. It would not be possible without you, so thank you so very much. Sometimes when we're working so hard, it's really easy to overlook how far we've come. And the end of the year is a perfect time to look back and appreciate some of the wonderful accomplishments, opportunities, and people who've helped us. In 2018, I was invited to participate in a beta program with Pandora. So far, the most difficult part was keeping my mouth shut for months. They told me about it, I think it was in June or May or something like that, and I was not allowed to say a word until just recently because they were working so hard to put their channels together. So if you haven't heard about it, it's because only in the last month that I've been able to even mention it. It was such a huge, huge honor to be selected to participate in their early release of their podcasting platform and to be in such great company with some other podcasters they have chosen for their beta program. So you can listen to the Savvy Painter podcast on Pandora's mobile app right now, but very soon it will be available on their website as well. I want to say, though, that if you're happy and comfortable listening to the podcast another way, you do not have to change anything. It's still available in all the same places you've been hearing it. Nothing is going to change there. This is just an addition for people who prefer Pandora, and I'll be excited to welcome new listeners through there. So in other big news, as I sort of just mentioned, we have my husband and I have left Mammoth, California, and we are now living a rather nomadic life. We are in the LA area and we will be here for about 6 months. We're figuring out where we're going to go next. So what that means for you, if you're in the Los Angeles area or anywhere nearby, we might be doing more meetups over the next couple of months. So keep an eye out for those. I've also been invited to teach next summer at JSS in Civita. So if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you've probably heard me talk about my experience studying in Italy with Israel Hirschberg and Yael Scalia. In 2015, I did their master's program and studied with Anne Gale, and then it was such a great experience, I went back in 2017 and studied with Susan Jane Walpe. Both were fantastic experiences and hugely, hugely influential on my painting. Every year, Israel invites a guest of honor for the master program and selects a number of artists to teach separate workshops. So I will be teaching one of those workshops from June 24th through July 8th, 2019. If you want more information on that workshop, you can go to savvypainter.com/JSS. You'll find links to everything there. JSS in Civita is an experience like none other. I did an entire episode detailing exactly what it was like, and I'm going to rebroadcast that now for you. Then we'll have a new episode on January 3rd with Vince Gerano. So without further ado, here is the rebroadcast of the 2015 episode about Civita Castellano, along with lots of tips for you when you are taking workshops. This past summer, I made a trip to Italy to participate in the JSS Master Program with Israel Hirschberg and guest of honor Anne Gale. The Master Program is an intense 6-week immersion into painting. It's unlike any other workshop or program I've ever been to. So some of you have been asking for an episode about my experience there, but rather than paint kind of a what I did on my summer break picture, I wanted to create something that might be a little bit more useful to you. I'm going to talk about my experience in the context of how to get the most out of a course or workshop. We'll cover in depth a few concepts that are critical to doing this. And these concepts, by the way, apply to any learning experience. Afterwards, I'll describe what the JSS program is like because I've been getting a lot of questions about that too. So let's start with the broad general points. The first and seemingly most obvious step to ensure that you get the most out of a program is to know who is giving the workshop. I know, I'm Captain Obvious, right? But seriously, make sure you know a little more than what the instructor's paintings look like or how popular he or she is on Facebook. Also, be clear on what you want. Know what you're getting yourself into and get an idea of what you want out of it, and then proactively dive in. So ask some questions to clarify this for yourself. And those questions can be something like, what are you looking to learn? Does the instructor's personality and teaching style suit you? Does your skill set fit with the level of instruction? And if you're not sure, ask, because I'm willing to bet that the artist leading the program is going to be more than happy to help you out with this. If you're looking to improve a specific skill set, is that what's being taught? So I know some of these questions seem obvious, but you would be surprised how many people don't ask them. And some of them you're going to have to answer yourself. Others you'll need to talk to the artist who's leading the program, and you might want to go the extra mile and find someone who's taken the workshop. The more specific with these questions, the more likely you are to have a great experience. You're investing your most valuable resource, which is your time. So stack the deck in your favor and go after what you want. And by the way, if the investment is really low, meaning it's a short or a local workshop, I'm more than willing just to check it out, go with the flow, and not worry too much about it. But if it involves me getting on an airplane, I'm going to make sure it's right for me. It would have been really easy for me to get super excited about going to paint in Italy. I mean, it's a dream of mine, and who wouldn't be excited to go paint there? But if I had expected a lighthearted painting vacation, leisurely painting quaint Italian villas with an instructor chauffeuring me out to great vistas and guiding me through museums and making sure that I was fully entertained, I would have been in for a big surprise, and I might have been a little bit disappointed. When you do just a little bit of work up front, when you ask yourself these questions, you are doing two important things. You clarify what's being offered, and I think this is most important, you get specific about what it is that you're after. I am all for being open to exploration and creativity, but when you are given the gift and the opportunity to be with another artist to learn, you'll get so much more out of it when you actively pursue what you want and need rather than just passively being there. So in the case of JSS in Civita, I'd spoken with Israel when I interviewed him for this podcast. And I was really fortunate that I was also able to speak with someone who had taken the course before. So I had a pretty good idea of what the program is like and what it would be like to study with Israel. I knew it would be intense. I knew I would be very well taken care of, and I would have plenty of support. I would have the freedom and the responsibility of directing my own time there. I knew I was expected to have a solid foundation already, and that the concepts that we would cover would go beyond things like drawing, perspective, and mixing colors. Not that we wouldn't touch on those, it just wouldn't be the focus. For me, it seemed like a perfect fit, and it was. I saw this program as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to study with two artists I admire and respect greatly. I was also aware that 6 weeks is a long time, and 6 weeks is also a very short time, so I was determined to make the most out of it. So when I thought about what I wanted to get out of the program, I decided my intention would be to absorb as much as I possibly could from both Israel and Anne. That sounds pretty simple, right? Maybe overly simple? I have my reasons. I know myself. I used to think I was a really good multitasker. And I've since learned that I'm not that good at it. In fact, I suck. If I want to do something and do it well, I have to do that one thing and nothing else. I can't even listen to my husband tell me about his day while I'm sending a text message. I mean, I can send a text while he talks, but I guarantee I will miss something, and the following weekend I'll have a surprise. I'll be, really? We're doing this? I didn't know that. Why didn't you tell me? So I picked one goal for my time in Civita. And here's where that overly simple intention can get difficult, because the most likely obstacle was my own mindset. I needed to be fully present and open. So I thought about what could get in the way of this. And when I'm honest with myself, I know that what can get in the way of it is my insecurity, ego, emotions, not being prepared, maybe even some outside elements. I try to think of things that got in my way in the past. So you probably already know this, but I went to the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena. An art center has a reputation for tough critiques. I'd witnessed and been the focus of some pretty brutal ones. I had to grow up a little bit, and I learned the hard way that the key to surviving the tough ones and getting the most out of any crit, because after all, that's why I was there, was managing my expectations, silencing my imagination, and listening. And I mean really listening. So here's a few examples of what I mean by that. So let's say I go into a critique thinking I had absolutely nailed a project. I mean, let's say I was sure that the instructor was going to be impressed. So I put my piece on the wall, I sit back, and I wait for the inevitable praise and gushing compliments to wash over me. By the way, that never happened. I mean the gushing compliments part. So what happens then if the instructor thinks my project falls far from nailing it? What happens if she hates it? I may be exaggerating a little bit about the gap between expectations and reality in this example, but even if I was just hoping she would like it and she didn't, what's my mindset then? What's my mindset if I'm expecting to impress the instructor with my work? And how might I react if she's not impressed? I can be sad, I can be disillusioned, I can take it personally and conclude that she's not talking about the painting, she's actually talking about me and she hates it. I can get angry, I can get defensive, I can be offended, but none of that gets me anywhere. Because if I choose any of those reactions, and it is a choice, I'm no longer listening. I'm no longer open to learning from this person. On the other hand, if my intention is to learn and to improve a skill or a concept that we've discussed, doesn't matter whether or not she's impressed or she likes the piece. You know, if I'm not able to execute the concept, I can explain how I understood it and ask questions to clarify so that I can try again with new information. Or if I demonstrated that I did understand the concept, we can talk about how maybe I can push it further or where I can take it next. Either way, I grow. But I'm not off in another world thinking about how awesome I am or wondering if I should just give up this whole art thing because clearly no one understands me. I'm not so caught up in the whirlwind of my own reactions that I miss what she's saying or lose the opportunity to understand by engaging her in a conversation. So we're talking about expectations and how they can be an obstacle. Another more subtle example would be a seemingly innocuous one. Let's say I'm thinking, hey, I'm going to go to Italy for 6 weeks. I'm going to come back with some great paintings. I'm going to come back with a suitcase filled with great paintings. I mean, it doesn't seem so unreasonable, does it? I'm going to go to Italy and paint for 6 weeks. So here's the problem with that one. If my intention while I'm painting is to make a good painting rather than learn, I might choose some safe motifs to paint. Maybe I have some facility with a particular subject matter, so I only choose that one. I might resist wiping out a painting and trying something I'd discussed with Israel. Or I might choose bucolic scenes because I know somebody will buy those. Any of those will cause me to lose sight of the real opportunity that I have right in front of me. So I mentioned silencing the imagination and listening earlier. Let me get back to that. All of these are intertwined and there are subtle variations on each, so I'm trying to come up with some concrete examples. When I say silence the imagination, I'm talking about silencing our inner critic. I'm talking about silencing that puzzle-solving part of the brain that wants to anticipate what's being said and so often gets it wrong. Be creative in painting, not listening. Our minds are not good at being quiet, not even for a second. It's uncomfortable. See what I mean? Were you thinking there was something wrong with the podcast? Were you trying to figure out why it was so quiet? We fill silence with worry because the brain is designed to solve problems. In silence, the brain invents problems so that it has something to do while it waits for a new challenge to fill the void. I was trying to find a concrete example of this to illustrate my point. And as I was looking through my journal from Civita, I found something that relates, but it's kind of a tangent. That's actually where I got that statement I just made about filling silence. When I write in my journal, I'm not expecting anyone ever to read it or hear about it. So I struggled a lot with whether or not I was going to read this to you. And I sat here for a long time debating it, but I finally decided just screw it. I'll be brave. Let's do this. So if I stumble, it's because my handwriting is really bad and I can barely read it myself. To put it in context for you, this entry is from probably about the fifth week, and I guess the night before I had been out and talking with some of the other students about the program. Okay. Elizabeth, a girl from Israel who studies in the JSS program there, asked me what I thought of the program here in Civita and why I felt like it had exceeded my expectations. It took me a while to figure it out. I did expect the program to be good. But the quality of students, their intensity and devotion to learning how to paint fuels Israel's teaching. I've never been to this program, so I can't say for sure, but I think this particular group was special. So that's one reason. Another is that Israel didn't spend much time teaching technique. The focus is on what makes a good painting, selecting the right motif to begin with, the pictorial versus the picturesque, staying present and truly looking. Which doesn't mean see more. It requires that we see less, less details, less extraneous pieces. It means saying more with less, seeing the essence. In verbal language, it means don't babble. Choose your words carefully. Be precise and clear. Stop talking when you've made your point. No, I mean it. Learn to shut up. Be comfortable with silence. Israel has a way of looking at you when he's talking about your art. He says something and then he squints his eyes and he twists the hair on his beard. It seems like he holds that gaze until he's satisfied with something. It can be uncomfortable if you let it. Our minds sometimes don't like silence. We fill it with worry because the brain is designed to solve problems. In silence, the brain invents problems to fill the void. When Israel stares at you, the intensity makes you want to fill the silence and know why he's not saying anything. It's easy to project fears onto that look. Fears like, my work is so bad, he's speechless. Oh my God, he thinks I'm an idiot. I am an idiot. Why can't I mix those greens right? Does he like the work? Did I do it right? Oh my God, everyone is looking at me thinking I'm a terrible painter. What am I doing here? Why did I come? I've seen people torture themselves with these thoughts and more. Maybe they project their inner critic on Israel and then react as if he actually did say those things. In some ways, Israel makes this easy because his critiques can be brutal. He doesn't pull any punches, and the truth hurts sometimes. He sees the weaknesses in your painting and will make sure that you see them too. He's relentless. You can't hide by choosing a motif that you have some facility with. I said the truth hurts. Maybe it's better to say it this way. Growing hurts. Change can be uncomfortable. You will not do well if you go to JSS thinking you know something already about painting. He will sniff that certainty out and rip it apart. The tighter you cling to it, the more brutal it feels. But I think a better way to look at it is that Israel is really tending a garden. He's pulling out weeds to make room for something else to bloom. Tangled roots that cling to the rocks beneath the surface are more difficult to rip out. They can leave a giant hole. Painting is a question. Israel has said that often. And I agree. If you come at it with predefined answers, there's no room to explore. There's no room for new growth. So, yeah, I actually really compared Israel to a gardener in my journal. So now, months later, when I think about the program and I think about those critiques and I think about what I learned there, I'm really grateful for the fact that Israel is so direct in his critiques. 6 weeks is not a long time, and there's not a lot of room for misunderstanding. And I think that's what I appreciated most about his critiquing. And in terms of that look, those stares, my guess is he's trying to guess whether or not we understood what he said, how we should rephrase it, or whether he should move on. So let's move on. We got plenty of feedback in both group settings and individual one-on-one settings. Morning and afternoon rounds were divided between Anne, Israel, his wife Yael, and his son Didi, both of whom are exceptional painters. Then, once a week, there would be a long group critique, and on Saturday mornings, Israel held office hours at a small cafe, and we could stop by, ask questions, or show him other paintings that we'd been working on since the last time we talked. In fact, I remember one Saturday, we all decided that the tagline for the program should be JSS in Civita, where your weaknesses will be revealed. Clearly, I wrote that journal entry after that session. The journal, by the way, is an important part of my learning. In the case of JSS, I would write about what we talked about, paraphrasing and trying to put it in my own words. If I couldn't explain it well in the journal, I knew I was missing something and I needed to ask more questions to understand something better. I also do this with books I read. Sometimes my journals are a log of what I did, but mostly they're concepts I'm struggling with or failing to grasp. Repetition is the mother of skill. Along with intellectual understanding, I needed to implement, as best as I understand them, the concepts and feedback that we discussed. Then I could get more feedback and try over and over and over and over again for as long as it takes. And sometimes that would take a very, very long time. Sometimes not. Sometimes I would get it easily. Most of the time I didn't. So at the end of the day, I ask myself things like, did I do my best to listen fully and not let my mind wander? Did I do my best to be present? Did I do my best to implement that concept? So in that regard, I have to offer myself a little bit of kindness. I know I can be harder on myself than anyone else. And maybe that's why I don't mind brutal crits, because there's nothing they could say to me that I haven't already said to myself. So I don't ask myself if I achieved something, if I met some goal. I ask, did I do my best? And if I did, that's enough. My first day in Civita, I met Gail Antical, who was just finishing up a drawing course as part of the affiliate program there. We were in the middle of a heat wave, and Gail's advice was to be set up and painting by sunrise. I am so glad I took her advice. That heat wave lasted another 4 weeks, and by 9 o'clock in the morning, it would be sweltering. I think the first words that I learned in Italian were molto caldo, which means very hot. The views around Civita Castellana are gorgeous. From where we stayed in the old town, I could walk less than 5 minutes in any direction, and I would have an overwhelming number of motifs to choose from. Half a block from the hotel where we were staying at was my favorite place to start my day. I could watch the sunrise over Mount Surratt. I had about 15 minutes to do a quick color sketch, and then set up for a morning painting of the valley below. Now, since I read something from my journal about Israel, I'll read a bit about Anne to make it even, although maybe this one's more about me in a self-deprecating way, but here we go. But before I do, I need to give you a backstory, or none of this is going to make any sense. When I moved to Argentina and was really struggling to learn Spanish, my husband pointed out an odd quirk that I have. When I don't understand something and I'm trying my best to decipher what I'm being told, I stare intently and I lean forward as if the problem is my hearing. And when I'm really in over my head and trying really hard to understand, my eyes narrow and my face scrunches up. It's pretty ridiculous looking, and I am sure it makes people wonder what is going on with this girl. I imagine if you don't know that that's just me trying really hard to understand you, and from your perspective, all you're doing is talking normally, it could seem a little weird. It might be a little awkward and possibly uncomfortable. Okay, back to the journal entry about Anne Gale. Anne came by to talk to me about the painting of the cliff that I was working on this morning. She reiterated concepts that we've discussed before. Look for similarities rather than differences. Slow down to mix the right color and keep comparing. Compare, 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 compare this to that, this to that. I caught myself thinking, I know this. And then my mind wandered into thoughts like, yeah, you know that. So why aren't you actually doing it? At which point, thanks to keeping up with my meditation practice, a quiet voice said, stop. Be present. Listen. I'm glad I didn't let that devolve into a tirade against myself. I asked Anne questions about the landscape in front of us, and we started talking about air and the space in between things, and could I make that visible in my painting? I have no idea how to do that. This is new territory for me. I became acutely aware that my time with Anne is limited, and as far as I'm concerned, Anne is the queen of painting the spaces in between, so if I'm going to get this concept, now would be a good time. I understood the words that she was saying, but I just wasn't getting it. Now I'm not sure if Anne looked at me funny or if I just became aware of it, but I suddenly realized I was doing that thing. I was leaning forward with a scrunchy face and probably not blinking at all. Maybe I unconsciously thought that the answer to how to paint the air was trapped in the space between us, and if I could just lean forward far enough into it and not blink, maybe it would transfer, like through osmosis or something. So I told her the scrunchy face story so that she wouldn't think I was a total freak, or worse, that I was making that face because of something she said. Okay, so that story is an example of me trying really, really hard to stay mindful of my one intention, my one thing I have to do. It's like those stupid Facebook posts, like you had one job. I could have let myself go down the path of thoughts like, oh, I already know that. Yes, yes, yes. Look for similarities. Compare, compare. It's bright next to what? We've talked about it. And then I probably would have made excuses for myself as to why I didn't actually do it. Because it's hot. Because I'm hungry. Oh, yeah, yeah, I was going to do that, but I was working on the drawing. Or maybe to protect my ego, I would have actually told Anne that I already knew that. And she probably would have said, okay, keep trying then. Or maybe offered a tip or two before she went off to talk with somebody else. I also could have listened, but not tried to implement her suggestions right away. I'm sure I could have convinced myself that I would remember everything in detail and do it later. Instead, I executed as much as I understood. I wiped out whole areas of the painting I'd been working on for the last few hours, and I tried to say with paint what I couldn't verbalize about what was right in front of me. I did that so that during the next crit, I could have the opportunity to talk more about the spaces in between with a concrete example that we both could point at, something that showed her how I understood it, where I got it, and where it fell flat. The painting may or may not have been successful. And Anne Gale may or may not think that I am totally insane, but I definitely learned something that I can take forward. Since I kept my intention to learn in the front of my mind, I wasn't afraid to put my bad paintings on the crit wall and say, hey, we talked about X, Y, and Z, and I tried to do it, and I got lost. I'm in over my head. What do you recommend? Both Israel and Anne gave concrete feedback on my bombed paintings, which gave me something tangible to reach for and made me want to try again and again and again and again, if necessary. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about an average painting day in Civita, or at least my average day. It actually got started the night before because I hate looking for things, and I'm kind of slow early in the morning, so I anticipated that. The night before, I'd go to the garage in the hotel where our painting gear was stored, and I would make sure that I had canvases prepared, that my clean brushes were back in my backpack, and that I had enough turpentine in my jar, and that everything I needed was in its place. At first, I'd take all of my paints with me, but I learned it was much easier and much lighter if I just laid out the colors on my palette and left the tubes in the garage. Back upstairs in my room, I'd lay out my clothes and my sunscreen so that I could find them easily in the dark the next morning without waking up my roommate, Alexa. By the way, I could not have asked for a better roommate. This girl put up with me for the entire 6 weeks, and she is wonderful. The next morning, I'd wake up about 20 minutes before sunrise, usually, and I could be set up and ready to go before the sun made it over the horizon. As you probably know, the light changes quickly at that hour, so I'd knock out one or two thumbnail color studies, and then I'd start a larger painting. I would try to make it back to the hotel just before 10 a.m. when breakfast ended. So the first week there, Israel asked us to do 10 transcriptions of Corot paintings. Transcriptions are when you sort of dissect the painting and try to understand what he was doing, what he was thinking about. So normally I'd find a shady spot and I'd paint these little studies. I really enjoyed doing them and I got a lot out of it. So I kept that up for most of the time that I was there. Plus, it was definitely a way to get out of the sun because it was way too hot to be anywhere else. After lunch, I'd take a short nap or go read in the air-conditioned hotel. And then when the heat died down, usually around 3 o'clock, I'd go out for an afternoon painting session. And then at around 7 or 8, everyone who stayed at the hotel would meet for dinner at the hotel restaurant there. And we would all talk about what we're painting in our day and all sorts of art talk. For the first 3 weeks of the program, there would usually be a lecture or an artist talk after dinner. A lot of people would go out for drinks afterwards. There's a great little bar off the main plaza that serves microbrews, and the club which faces the plaza. Both of those are really fun places to go. I didn't start going until after the first 3 weeks when the after-dinner art talks kind of thinned out. Those first 3 weeks, I could barely get my gear ready for the next day before I pass out in bed. I was exhausted. So that's kind of the average day. Very full, but very, very fun. So now I'll give you an overview of kind of the entire program. The first 3 weeks and the last 3 weeks of the program had really distinct feels to them. Week one was kind of a blur. I spent a lot of time getting oriented, figuring out the streets of Civita, finding painting spots, and getting to know everyone. Painter's Point is the support base for the program. Allison and her husband Neil were there every morning and afternoon in case we needed more turpentine, an umbrella, helping arrange a ride somewhere, or pretty much anything. They've lived there long enough that they know most people in town, including one or two that you should ignore, and also where to get everything. I found out halfway through the program that Allison makes gorgeous handmade sketchbooks. She uses Fabriano watercolor paper. It's heaven to paint on. So I'm going to put a link to her Flickr page in the show notes because they're gorgeous. I love mine and I'm almost ready for a replacement. I definitely recommend picking one up if she has any available, but they go pretty fast. As I mentioned earlier, there are what's called affiliate programs running simultaneously with the master program. Israel invites artists to come in and give their own courses. All told, there were about 100 students, 40 or so in the master program. The rest in the artist residency program or in the various affiliate programs. Gail Antical, Connie Hayes, you might remember her from an earlier interview on this podcast, and later Kurt Moyer's courses overlapped with the time that I was there, and it was such a pleasure to get to know them and spend time with them. Because of the affiliate programs and the fact that students can choose to be in the master program from 2 weeks up to the full 6 weeks, there are a lot of people coming and going at different times. Those first 3 weeks, I'm pretty sure we had the entire hotel plus several private apartments and a whole house rented out. It's hard to describe how special it is to be surrounded by so many talented, dedicated, and hardworking artists in a place like Civita Castellana. It's magical. I wanted to be everywhere at once. I wanted to sneak in on Connie's class, take a little side trip to the countryside to paint with new friends, and not miss a single round of critiques. I wanted to do everything and be everywhere. And in hindsight, if I could change anything, it would probably be that. In such an intense program, you need a break. And I didn't take any. After about the fourth week, I started to burn out. So if I could change anything in the way that I did it, I would make sure that I took at least one day off every week and did absolutely nothing. Maybe even not get out of bed. Every Thursday was an excursion day. We went to Florence, Naples, Bologna, Assisi, Urbino, and of course Rome, where we visited museums to draw from the master paintings. The bus rides were a perfect opportunity to have long talks about painting and art and life. I had long, unforgettable talks with Anne, Alana, and her husband Ari, Margie, and Chris. Some of the highlights of those excursions were the phenomenal frescoes. I can't tell you how amazing, exciting, and beautiful it was to just stand in front of them. Another highlight was dissecting the Caravaggio's Flagellation of Christ with Anne, wandering the streets of Florence, the Morandi Museum, and lunches with Peggy, who seems to know all the best restaurants in Italy. Pizza will never be the same. And I have to say that there is no way we could have made it through all of those cities and then back to the bus on time without Ron. Ron is a critical part of the support team and a very talented painter. He also has a gift of language. I'm not sure how many languages he speaks. He's fluent in at least three that I know of, and thank God for all of us that one of those is Italian. He kept those trips moving and made sure that no one was left behind. Ron also organized and translated our visits to the studio of Master Cinzo, who is a treasure of Civita Castellana. Vincenzo creates perfect copies of ancient Roman and Greek pottery. To watch him work is amazing, and to learn how he recreated the tools to do it is a lesson in determination and perseverance. Vincenzo is an expert on ancient pottery and the cultural history of the area. It was such a gift to see him at work. After the third week, there was a palpable shift in the program. Connie and her group left, Kurt's course finished, Anne Gale's part of the program ended, and a lot of people went home. It felt empty, and I really missed everyone. The day after that group left, I was pretty sad. I missed my chats with Anne, I missed my lunches with Alana and Ari, and it was weird to walk through the lobby and not see Connie on her couch writing notes for her group and checking her emails. It also marked the halfway point for those of us who stayed. Everyone was working hard and fully committed. It doesn't seem possible that it could have gotten more focused and intense, but it did. We realized how quickly the first 3 weeks passed, and I think we anticipated that the next 3 weeks would pass just as quickly. They did, maybe even more so. We got to spend a lot more time with Yael and Didi, both of whom are wonderful painters. Didi gave a painting demonstration that had everyone absolutely captivated. Yael did too, and she gave a talk about her work that was fascinating. She's agreed to do an interview sometime, so I won't go too much into it here. Reading back through my journal, though, I can tell you that her talk gave me a lot to think about, and it made a huge impression on everyone. I'm grateful for the chance to know them both. There is so much talent in that family. I'm still digesting much of what I learned there. Israel told me it would take a year. I believe him. It's an outstanding program in an exceptional place, and I'm very much looking forward to doing it again. I miss Civita already, and I cannot wait to go back.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this rebroadcast of the episode JSS in Civita and Optimizing Your Workshop Experience. Once again, I'll be teaching there this summer from June 24th until July 8th, 2019. If you want more information on that workshop or to see what else is going on over at JSS this summer, you can go to savvypainter.com/JSS. You'll find links to everything there. On January 3rd, we'll have a brand new episode with the artist Vince Girano. Enjoy your holidays, and I hope 2019 brings you lots of love, laughter, and painting bliss. We'll talk soon.